Hello, fellow bonsai lovers. Welcome to another episode of the Bonsai Stuff Podcast. As usual, it's me, Scott Martin. Thank you very much for tuning in. Love it that I get so many people that are so enthusiastic and love the same thing that I do, which is these little trees in pots. It's awesome. This podcast, I want to talk about a lot of things in regard to design more than procedural stuff, because I do lots of training, lots of workshops and that sort of stuff. I was going to say I do lots of podcasts, but you already know that. I do lots of connectivity with people where we talk about different things with the trees, and I like to use this podcast as a topical thing for right now. You might listen to it sometime in the future and do a catch up or whatever it is, but right now we're heading into that early fall, early autumn part of the season for us, and I try and look for common ground when I'm talking to people. Like if I repeat myself with different people at the same time, then it's like, oh, okay, well that's something that's happening that's affecting a lot of people. That's probably a good topic to talk about on the podcast. And so that's when I talk about visual weight on your bonsai. So that's something that I'll be yakking about a bit today. The other is while we're looking at bonsai itself, and we talked about, previously the bud conveyor, which I've got lots of really good feedback about. Thank you very much. That bud conveyor that we can use to try and help maintain our design integrity. And then other things have been raised with me with other people talking about bonsai and whether it's a static art form, whether it's something that stays the same, like another type of art, like painting, for instance, or clay or something like that. So I want to give you my two cents worth on that. And also I had the joy this week of working with a mate of mine in another location based up in Canberra. I'm based in Melbourne, so we're over Zoom, and we've been working on a tree for a long time to do this air layer, and it came time to separate the air layer. And I had a first that I want to share with you. I had, we were talking about securing this layer in the pot because not many roots, so you've got to tie, these different bits of twine around the trunk itself and hold it in. And I got to see for the first time today a truckie's hitch get used to tie in bonsai, which I've never seen before. So thanks, Brendan. Appreciate it, mate. So anyway, strap yourself in. This one, like I said, is going to be a bit on the arty side of bonsai from, the world according to Scott when it comes to bonsai, so it doesn't have to be the only way. But I want to talk about it because hopefully it might help you when you're looking at your trees and give you something else to look at and consider. So when you look at your bonsai and you sit back from it and you get that feeling in the back of your head that says something's not right, I just don't know what it is. I've had people come into the workshop saying, I'm over this tree, I'm sick of it, I'm done, this is it, I bought it here as a last chance. And then, half an hour later they're going, I love it, looks great. And we've talked about, flow and design before, with trees pointing a certain way and the weight and the flow goes that way. So what I want to talk about is the visual weight of your bonsai. All right. So when you consider the space that the foliage is taking on your bonsai, that's the visual weight, right? So it could be the apex is too large, like it's sort of things have been allowed to grow out, which is why this is really topical for right now, because as we head into the cooler period, you've still got a growth time. We're the other side of summer now, still got the tail end of some warm weather, but all in all, things are starting to grow, and that's where, feedings start to kick in for me. But it's this visual weight that I think makes a massive difference. Things you've got to consider when it comes to visual weight are your trunk thickness, because if you've got a bigger trunk, like a thicker trunk, and I've got my hands out in front of me, sort of they're about 30 centimetres wide, right? So if you've got a big trunk, then you can handle more visual weight because the trunk will support it. But it's all got to be in proportion, right? So if you've got a trunk that's, only centimetres thick, it's very light, it's very elegant, then you've got to have far less visual weight when it comes to your foliage pad size and your foliage density. And that's why when you look at pictures of, say, a literati style, which is, you know, the very, very whimsical sort of trunk with a few little branches here and there, and they look very light and wispy, and they can be very elegant, extremely elegant in their design. But as they grow and as that foliage multiplies out, you know, the 1 to 2 kicks in, and things start to double and get longer and thicker and denser and healthier, basically, and happier, then the visual weight of that design starts to change. It starts to vary greatly. And what was once a really nice, elegant tree can then suddenly become too much. And that's where it's this visual weight that you've got to consider. So when I style a tree, when I look at a tree that is presented to me and the basic concept is I'm not sure what to do, I'm stuck, this thing just doesn't feel right, it's, you know, whatever, I look at the flow of the foliage and the trunk and say, okay, so is the flow correct? That's step one. And if that's right, then what about the visual weight? Is, you know, if I've got the correct trunk going the right way, if I've got the apex going the right way, if my key branch is going the right way, then the visual weight of the foliage, does it match with the tree that I'm trying to present? And more often than not, that's where the problem is. It's because foliage has got too thick, too dense, too long, too high, too deep, whatever it is, it's got out of whack and it doesn't any longer represent that design that was originally intended for that tree when it was made beautiful originally. And that could happen, you know, 6 months, 12 months, 2 years, 10 years, whatever it is. But sooner or later, because we promote these inner buds, because we feed the trees, we water them really well, we put them in good spots, they backbud, they get vigorous and they start to get really, really dense. Density is not always your friend when it comes to bonsai. You know, too thick, stuff in the interior starts to die, starts to push up, starts to get higher. That visual weight of your foliage starts to get too big. And that's where, so you've got your trunk and trunk thickness, which will determine the size of the pad that you can maintain. And, you know, like I said, if you come back to it, if you've got a couple of centimeters diameter on a trunk, then really depending on the design, your pad weight can't be the size of your hand. You know, it's too big it's too much visual weight for that pad to maintain for that thickness of a trunk. So therefore, it's got to come back into proportion. And this proportion thing comes into it all the time. You know, you should have a photo of your bonsai on a neutral position where there's no reference points, and you should not be able to tell whether that tree is 10 centimetres tall or 10 metres tall. There should be that linking between them all to say, well, okay, it's a small tree, so therefore I've got to have, you know, whatever. My pad's always going to stick out longer because I can't cut it back that small. But it's all about keeping things in proportion. And the visual weight of your pad size is determined by your trunk thickness. Link that again too with the pot size. So we'll come back. You know, you've got the 2 centimeter trunk, and it's, you know, it's a very light, elegant tree. Whatever it is, doesn't, you know, ignore the height of the thing for now. But if you've got a 2 centimeter thick trunk and you pop it into a 40 centimeter wide pot, then it's out of proportion. You know, that trunk's going to get lost. It's going to look like it's swimming in the middle of an ocean. So you need to make sure that your pot weight marries up with your trunk thickness, and then the pad weight also marries up with that trunk thickness as well. So it all comes back to the visual weight of everything you've got comes into line. And often you'll find, or I find, with the bigger trees, it's a bit easier to get this weight, the visual weight balance correct, because you'll hunt around a little bit more and you'll get the right pot to suit it. Whereas when you've got a smaller tree, it's sort of like, oh, I've got this pot that'll work for that tree. And it may start as a training pot. You might be scared about watering, making the pot too small, whatever it is. And that's not what I want to talk about now. But what I want to talk about is the visual weight of the pot that you've got has to also balance with the trunk thickness that you've got, which then must balance with the foliage mass that you've got as well. If either of those get out of whack, if you've got a perfect pot for it and you look, you know, for the lower part of the tree and you look at that trunk and go, yep, that looks perfect, absolutely spot on. But then you get up and that foliage has grown really big, the branches have extended out, they've got really super heavy, then you're still in the same position where you're scratching your head going, I don't know what to do. Like, and often that terror of cutting a branch or removing foliage is real. Like, it affects a lot of people, and that paralysis sort of kicks in and nothing gets resolved. You don't fix it, but you look at the tree and go, I'm not happy, I'm not sure what to do. And that's where I suppose, you know, I've said it before, people like me or someone independent in your bonsai network that you've got can look at it and go, well, you know what I'd do this, or I'd remove that, or have you thought about reducing the length of this, or cutting this down, or doing something like that. And that's really important, because it might just reaffirm exactly what you're thinking in the back of your head, but you don't have the, you know, don't have the oomph to get out there and give it a nip yourself, because you love this thing that's sitting in front of you. It's been with you for a long time. You've grown it, you've fed it, you've done all the good stuff. You know, oh, Scott, you said to me to feed my trees and water them and get them to grow and get the bud conveyor going and get everything to build and, you know, whatever, and get happy and healthy. And it's doing that. And now you're asking me to cut it all off. How does that work? It works because you've got to still get to your design. You've got to get your bonsai to look like a bonsai. It can't just look like a shrub in a pot. Being happy and healthy gives you options, right? So we do all these things. We fertilize, we, you know, put it in the sunshine. We give it a cuddle every second day. You know, you do all that stuff so you can cut back and be safe, that your design can be get back to where it was, or you can bring it back to being proportion for the size of the tree that you want. That's what it's all about. And visual weight of the tree for me is, you know, put flow in there. Put flow of the design, like it's got to be in symmetry. You know, if it's sort of going to the left and then coming back to the right, well, the apex has to sit to the right-hand side, the key branch has to be on the right-hand side, the left-hand side has to be the compression side. Yep, cool. If it's flowing to the left and your key branch is to the left and your apex is to the left, then the right side needs to be the compression side. Yep, cool, no worries. But visual weight of that whole area too has to be in balance. You know, you can't have it where you've got the flow correct, but your visual balance of your design is out of whack and too heavy, which is really common, bloody common at this time of the year especially. And that's why we get in and we give these things a bit of a prune and a bit of a cutback and open them up. And when you look at a tree that you love, doesn't matter what time of the year it is or where it's from or whatever, just keep the visual weight of the foliage in the back of your mind and become the expert. Become the person that's the critique that looks at it and goes, what would I change? If that was on my bench, what would I change? And that's, I've said it before, it's not a negative thing. It's a mental game for you to then use that on your trees when you look at things independently. And if you look at a beautiful tree, it doesn't matter whose name's scratched on the bottom of the picture, have a look at it and say, why do I like it? What do I love about that tree? And flow and visual weight are some of the big things. You know, that balance with the proportion of the trunk. You don't need to have bonsai that always have trunks the thickness of your thigh. You can get them where they're the thickness of your little finger and be as elegant as anything and magnificent and far better than some of those big bulky trees. So it's just because it's a big tree doesn't make it a good tree. You know, you've got to have all this stuff right. And one of the big things that, like I said, that comes up a lot is this visual weight. And if you sit back and you look at your bonsai and you say, that looks too big, then the visual weight is out of whack. You've got to, you know, you don't want any area to be too strong or dominant, and you need to make a change. And best way I can do it is with scissors. You can wire things, you can move things around, that's cool. You can thin things out. You can shorten length, and that's how we go and remove or reduce the visual weight of our bonsai and keep it in check. So in this section of the podcast, as I take a sip of my coffee and sit back in my chair and lean back and put on my smoking jacket, and we sit here and we contemplate bonsai as an art form. You know, there isn't. No, it isn't. I think bonsai is an art form, and I enjoy it. I really do. I love the horticultural side. I really, really love the horticultural side, and I love the design side just as much. And I love, you know, this planning side of things where you can build it up over years. You know, maybe it's a really short term one where your plan's a 6-month plan, or it's a 3-month plan, or it's a, you know, but some plans for me are like 30-year plans with some of my deciduous. I know that, you know, quite possibly in my lifetime they'll never get to where I want them to, where I can envision them to be and where I want them to be. But that's cool. I'm happy with that. I'm really, really happy, because every time that I work on these trees, they just take a step closer. And that step doesn't need to be, you know, the 100-yard, 100-metre sprint. It can be a marathon, you know, which I really enjoy too, and I love that process. But what I want to talk about now is with the art form side of things, and the reason why I've got my smoking jacket on is the question I want to pose to everybody is bonsai a static art form? You know, can we keep our trees looking identical in every shape and form for the rest of their lives? When they get to a point where you go, yep, perfection, target achieved, tick the box, put a sticker on it saying you're done, can they stay as a static art form? And some people believe that they can, but for me, I don't think they can. And that's one of the key drivers. I was going to say the key driver. It's not the key driver. It's one of the key drivers why I love bonsai so much, because I know that when I get to a certain point and I look at a tree and I take a photo and, you know, maybe I post it or maybe it's just for me, I look and I go, that's bloody magnificent. That is perfection. That is exactly what I want to achieve. I know that somewhere down the track, that's got to change. Like, and there's things that I can't control. You know, that the bonsai gods have far more power at this stuff than what I do. I'm a custodian. I appreciate that. I do the absolute best that I possibly can. If I don't, then I know, you know, no matter what I say, I know I'm cheating. If I don't weed them when they should be done, if I don't fertilize them when they should be done, if I don't water them when they need to be watered, then that's on me. No matter what I say externally, I know deep down inside me that that's on me. But there's certain things that I cannot control within a tree system that the bonsai gods get in there and they can manipulate. You know, be it, you know, maybe a bud doesn't grow where it should. Maybe the bud conveyor doesn't work quite as well as what it should. But I've done everything I possibly can. I've made sure that inner light gets, you know, in a sunlight gets into those inner areas of the tree. But the tree just doesn't want to throw a bud there. Maybe it's just not built to have a bud there. Or, you know, a branch dies. That is out of my control. You know, if I've done something wrong to it, 100%. Put your hand up. You know, yep, no problems. That's on me. But there's times in your bonsai life where there's so much outside your control that you can't get upset about it. You cannot, you know, chuck the towel in and say, that's it, that was my favourite, I'm done now, I'm over this, because we can't control everything. And that's the beauty of bonsai. That is the, for me, that's one of the kickers, that I can walk out there tomorrow and a branch can have come off a tree that's fallen, it's blown around in the wind and snapped a branch off that I could never in my wildest dreams vision happening. Like, I couldn't have prepared for this thing. But, you know, yeah, sure, I can be upset about it, and, you know, I can curse and I can swear and I can cry for days. But really, there's nothing I can do but keep taking steps forward. Always got to take that step forward. There's no way you can look back and say, geez, what if I'd bought a different house and I had it in a different yard and I didn't have trees above it? Oh, God, that's so far outside your control. Or sometimes, you know, fungal issues come in. Yeah, prepare for it as best you can. You take all precautions in the world, but, you know, maybe things are just destined to happen that you can't control. And that's where the evolution of your trees, you know, I love it. I think that's one of the benefits of bonsai, is that we don't get stuck with something that once we've achieved our design, that we don't get stuck with something, or that we get to the point where we become bored with it, for want of a better word, where you look at it and go, you know, I've loved the process getting to here. Now I'm here, it's like, maybe it's 1 year, 2 years, 10 years down the track where you look at it and go, it's the same. Nothing's changed on this thing. And, you know, it's some people love that. Some people buy a piece of art, like a painting, and they can look at that for the rest of their lives exactly the same way. Bonsai for me isn't that art. Bonsai for me is something that I can look at, I can get to a level, and I can maintain it through this bud conveyor, through the integrity of the design. No problems. I can aim for it, but there's certain things that are outside your control. You know, you can't, you can do everything you possibly can to stop a tree, you know, getting a pest move in, or you know, something external happening to that tree, but you can't prevent it. You can't put this thing into a little steel cage and say, well, that's how you're going to live your life because I don't want things to change. You just can't prevent these things. And the evolution, does it change the design? Does it change the bonsai itself by this art form changing? I don't know. The base core of the bonsai never changes. Like, it's still there. You know, your root system, your trunk, your branches, yeah, they might come and go, and the foliage, you know, the genetics inside the leaf or the needle or whatever it is, that all stays the same. So does the bonsai fundamentally change with a change in its design? I don't know. I don't know if I think that that's the case. Do I think it's a static art form? No, I don't. And I don't want it to be. If it becomes static, I don't think I'd be as involved in it as what I am. And I love talking to people that make pots for our trees, because it's a whole other kettle of fish where you know, the design itself, you know, the complexity of the tree comes involved with the complexity of the pot, and the two have to marry up hand in hand. But for me, once that pot's made, you can then, you know, I had someone explain to me recently where they said that the making of the pot is like, even though that pot itself is finished, it's used as part of the evolution to get to the next design of pot. And it's that stepping stone that you're using with that static art form to continually improve and change your pots. But you're sort of like, you're not taking the one pot and redesigning it. You're taking that core and going, right, last time I did this, this next time I'm going to do that. And that's the evolution of pot making, which is very cool in itself, and I love that. And I think that that can be used with our bonsai too, because you can use that evolutionary steps with your tree to say the core itself is the same, like the bonsai itself is the same. Does the physical appearance of it change over time? Yep, sure does. But is it still the same tree? It is the same tree. That doesn't change. The integrity of the tree stays the same, but the design, overall aesthetic of the design, yeah, that can change over time. And I don't know if I'd like to have that thought in the back of my head that as I'm working on my trees, when I get to that finish point, that I'm done, that I'm finished, that there's no more, that I have to stop. Because, you know, if I just had to go around watering trees and not, you know, not thinking about the future plan for them and said, okay, the plan now is for the rest of your life, tree, the next 300 or 400 years, I'm just going to feed you, weed you and water you, and I'll prune you during the proper seasons, and I'll maintain it via the bud conveyor. Would that make me entirely happy and content? No, I don't think it would. So, like I said, that's, you know, those forced redesigns that I've talked about previous episodes, they're an opportunity for me to take things to the next level, and I actually enjoy it that it's not a static art form. And, you know, feel free to shoot out if you feel that it is a static art form, because I'd love to hear the other side of it. But I think we're working with a living thing that we have very little control over. As much as you want to think you've got full control over this, you don't. And I think that once you can grasp that, and you do the best you possibly can, and you put yourself in the custodian seat, and you put on the artist hat to say, okay, right now this is what's best, and this is my plan going forward. That plan's not set in concrete; it's not confirmed 100%. Then you can sort of take a lot bigger steps forward on the path to your contentment when it comes to bonsai and this art that we work with. Righto. So to wrap up this podcast, I just want to talk about some, along the design theme that this started with this podcast, I'm going to talk about some design considerations that I think are important for you when you start working with your trees and you're trying to consider that base design and the long-term target that you want to achieve. So first up, I'll start with probably the most important part, that bonsai design is very personal, all right? What I design my trees like, what you design your tree like, what you like to look at and what I like to look at, or what we think is that perfection, can be very different, and that's okay. I love that part of it as well, that we can have the same species grown the same way and they look completely different. There's nothing bad about that. And when I look at someone else's tree and I think, what would I change, as I was saying before, I don't look at that as a negative. I don't look at that as something to say, that person hasn't done it right. I look at it and think, you know, it's just to keep my bonsai brain ticking over, and what for me would be the idea of perfection with this tree. So I don't think that you can be ruled by other people. Your bonsai network's really, really important, but the ultimate driver or the reason why you design something a certain way, that should come from you, from within. And I'm pointing at myself in the chest at the moment because I'm very strong on that when I get asked an opinion, I'll give it. That's no problem. And when you ask someone for an opinion, accept that opinion. But when it comes to decision making, when the ultimate final step in the process, that's on you. That's definitely on you. And if you want someone to guide you and steer you, then that's cool too. But and you don't have to always say, yeah, that's fine, I'm going to make the decision. But if you'll evolve, you'll get to the point where you should be the one that looks at things and goes, yep, take on board what you said, but that's not for me. This is really what I want. And so that leads me into the next one. One of the most important things is the horticultural side. You know, we can want things to look a certain way. We can want them to grow a certain way. We can want the end result to be whatever we want it to be. You know, make it look like a bloody fairy castle on top of a hill. But it's not going to mean that we can achieve it, because there are horticultural constraints that we all have to deal with, every single person, every single one of us. And seeing a tree designed in a space to look a certain way right now doesn't mean that in 10 years' time that thing's going to be doing quite as well as what it is right now. All right, so there are constraints that we have to deal with. There's growth habits with the trees that we work with as well. There's so many different varieties that grow certain ways. Some of our natives don't like to be wide below the horizontal. So if you've got in mind, for instance, an Australian native that's going to be shaped and styled to look like a pine tree, that's cool, no worries. But sometimes that's not achievable because horticulturally that tree cannot grow like that. It won't thrive like that. It won't survive when you put that kind of styling expectation on it. So there's constraints, and that's where you've got to do your homework and have a look at the species that you're working with and just see if there's any limitations on what you want to achieve. You know, wanting it to look a certain way and being able to actually get it there, that's a very different story. And then there's the third consideration is the expected view. And this one is, you know, I've got in inverted commas the norm, you know, and it's not cookie cutter. It's not, you know, designing every tree to look the same, but, you know, it's how we are expecting to see a certain type of species. And when we don't see it that way, we sort of go, oh, okay. Not that it's a bad but it's just a different way of looking at that tree. And, you know, I've also put in my notes that it's how we expect to see these trees in nature. And I don't hand on heart think that bonsai should replicate nature, because there's some pretty ugly trees in nature. And bonsai for me is about achieving perfection. Whatever it is, it's about achieving perfection in my mind, right? So your trees achieve perfection as to how you see those trees in your mind. Now, you know, you can look at the same species and see 100 different photos of them and go, I don't like any of them. I don't like any of those designs. But then you'll be walking along somewhere, you'll see something and go, my God, that's perfect. I love that. And that's the idea of perfection. And that's this norm that I've got in the back of my head when I talk about, you know, tree designs. Or a design consideration that you might have, you know, my prickly paper bark that I've designed is from an image I have in my head when I was a kid, you know, a nature strip tree that I sort of grew up with, you know, riding my bike and laying underneath and, you know, mucking around, and it's got great memories for me. And that's the design that I have in my head. They don't all grow exactly the same way, but for me, that's a major design consideration when it came to that particular tree. I work on a lot of different prickly paper barks and I don't necessarily see that same design in every single tree. It's just this one had the trunk movement, had the branch positioning, had the bit of deadwood that made me think, yeah, that is that tree that I've got in my memory. I'm not duplicating it. I'm not, you know, photocopying it to make it exactly the same. I'm working off an image of perfection that I have in the back of my head. So that norm view that you have of things, it can be from, you know, walking through parks. It can be from, you know, hiking through nature. It can also be from what you see online. You know, don't degrade that image of perfection that you have because it's an image of someone else's tree that you've seen online. You'll never be able to replicate it exactly anyway, but don't be belittled to thinking that, you know, because you haven't seen that tree hanging off the side of a mountain somewhere on a hike that you did that took you, you know, 15 days to get to with small packs of rations that you had to heat up over a fire every night. Don't let it in your mind make it any less powerful or any less desirable for what you want to achieve with your design. So I think this comes back to step one, the personal part, that, you know, really it's you that dictates what beauty is when it comes to your bonsai within the horticultural constraints that we all have to deal with. And the final step with the design considerations, so I don't rabbit on too much in this podcast, is the methods required to achieve the design. Can the tree survive the process that you're going to put it through to achieve your design? You know, and if it can't, then find another way of doing it. Some trees are best designed with, you know, heavy wire and heavy bending. Other trees, that's just going to destroy them. So therefore, it's a clip and grow. It's a different type of methodology that you need to use. Don't lump them all into the same basket using the same process, because some species you'll hit the target with and other species you won't hit the target with. You know, you look at the bonsai magazines or stuff you see online and whatever, and, you know, there's a commonality when you see these different types of techniques that are used to achieve the end result, because those species can handle that process and they can do okay as long as they're in a healthy state. Other trees, you know, our natives and stuff like that, you've got to be a bit more cautious with them and achieve it maybe a slightly different way. So you've got your personal considerations, you've got the horticultural considerations, you've got the norm, as I like to call it, and what you'd expect to see, not what everyone would expect to see, but what you would expect to see, which gives you your idea of perfection. And then it's how you're going to do it. Because, you know, if you've got a tree that is growing a certain way, but it needs to be, you know, grown and, you know, buckled over another way, can the tree survive that process to get to your idea of perfection for it? Or is it better to pick another species or another sample of tree of that species that you can then work with to achieve it? You know, is the base core of the tree going to allow you to achieve your perfection of the norm of beautiful? Or do you need to change for that particular tree that you've got in front of you? Does your perception of beautiful or perfection have to change to suit the stock? So a couple of key things, but like I said, number one, as long as you're happy and the tree can survive the process and it's going to thrive in the way that you've designed it, go for it. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. And just like that, folks, this podcast is done. Just want to say a special thank you to all the subscribers. You know, I know I bang on about it, but seriously, it means a lot. And if you're considering becoming a subscriber, please do, because it goes a long way to keeping this podcast running. I hope you've enjoyed this one too, being a little bit different. The design side of things isn't something that I like to bang on about, because it is, as I said to you in the last section of the podcast, it's very personal. And I take that very seriously, and my role as someone to sort of, you know, try and help or facilitate things with your bonsai getting to the next level and you getting to the next level, I never try and overstep that mark at all when it comes to design, because it can be soul crushing. You know, you can see people get deflated pretty quickly when they're told the tree that they see in the back of their mind, what they see is perfect and the ideal, you know, is a piece of crap. I just don't think that's fair, and it's very, very, very selfish on the person who's providing that opinion. So be careful. If you're part of the bonsai network for someone and they come to you and say, hey, what do you reckon? You know, try to be understanding and put yourself in that person's position too, because for someone to come out and ask that can take a hell of a lot. You know, design is very, very personal, and you're putting your heart on your sleeve when you talk about these things and you put yourself out there, that your words can cut pretty deep. So just make sure that you're positive and that you're considerate of other people and that you're helpful with it too. You know, don't just throw in something like, oh, it's a piece of rubbish, I'd put it in the bin. Or, you know, it looks like a tree that's been driven over by a council worker or something like that. That's just rubbish, to be honest. So be positive, be helpful, be considerate, and also take into account that it takes a lot of guts for someone to ask for help when it comes to design, and it's normally something that they'll keep in the back of their mind and they'll never spread out there. So just be mindful of that. I really enjoy this time of year. I love it as we head towards the cooler period. I do love warmer weather. I do love surfing. I do love getting in the water at that time of the year. But as we head towards the cooler period too, you know, I know that there's more swell on the way, so I'll be all right for winter. But I do like the change that comes in with our trees. And I was talking about this just recently with someone, you know, when they were talking about Australian natives with me and how, you know, oh, I'm ditching the collection. I'm going down the path of natives. And it's like, yeah, but every tree has its prime time, you know, and natives are great, they're awesome, and they should be 100% a strong part of our collection no matter where you are around the world. But some of these exotics that we get, they offer so much. And for me, my deciduous now that the warm weather's gone, daylight hours are getting shorter, temperatures are starting to drop down slowly, it's getting definitely cooler overnight, then the trees are just starting getting ready to change, and it's bloody exciting. I really enjoy it. So, you know, our Australian natives, we don't get that change of colour. You know, there's only one that I know of that will change colour, but the vast majority don't change colour like this. And, well, yeah, there's so much benefit to them. I think that keeping the bonsai book open for yourself and being able to get that smile on your dial throughout the whole year, no matter what it is you've got in front of you, I think they've got a lot to offer. So, you know, deciduous are about to come into their own, and I tell you what, I'm grinning like a cat from ear to ear at the moment, because I know what's in front of me with a few of the trees, with the colour and the foliage that's on there, and it's just going to be magnificent. So I'm really excited. So get on to fertilising your trees. If you haven't started already, then I don't know where you are around Australia, but you'd be pretty close to pushing the go button, I'd reckon. I've definitely started mine. I'm well down the track and starting to think about the next batch of fertilising I'm going to do too, and buying up my stocks. And also the next thing on the cards for me is repotting, so that's somewhere down the track. But anyway, that's for somewhere in the future. I'm going to start talking in the next podcast about needle removal techniques. I got asked about it the other day, so I want to bring that up and start talking about that, as well as the concept, which is, you know, we talk about it's funny, this podcast was talking about a visual weight of your trees and cutting things back to make sure they don't stay too big. The next podcast I'm going to be talking about knowing when to put the scissors down, which sort of goes hand in hand with this one as well, because you can work on the visual weight, but you've got to know when to stop with these things. And there's a few things to talk about with that too. So anyway, that's the next podcast that's coming up for you next week. So thanks for sticking around. Really appreciate it. Love your subscribers. Love everyone who listens to this podcast. It means a hell of a lot to me. And until next time, happy bonsai.